Good morning. Welcome. Wow, thank you, Tope, for your show. Always interesting. And I had my speaker on. So this show, my show, hey, I also want to say thank you to Publius for all the very interesting points he raised. They were excellent. And I might even comment on them, but it's not my place to comment on them, except for constructive good. So, well, where am I? I'm outside on the patio, the veranda, because Bacani is sleeping in the downstairs in the sunroom or the living room where I would normally, or close to where I'd normally do the show. And we got home very late, so they did a show down on the coast, which we went to because they wanted to take a whole entourage of kids, and I didn't really want my second daughter driving so that she didn't have the responsibility. So Lydia and I went down and we enjoyed the beach and a few other things. It was wonderful. And then we went to go and see the end of the show. The wrap-up, really. It's a bar, so it's not a, you know, stage show, it's a bar. But they really got the place revving. Hey, what I had planned for numerous weeks was a talk about free speech. And then Elon bought Twitter, and that took the whole thing to a new level, which is not really something that interests me too much, because I think we need to get rid of things like Twitter. But let's wrap up a few things first. Let's talk about Publius. I hope you won't mind if I do that. Firstly, let me try and recall what all he said, and I have to admit that I've only had a fraction more than 3 hours of sleep, so I'm not going to make as much sense, but I wanted to get this done. Well, firstly, he mentioned that he does interesting things, and that we have choices, which are very important. Well, no, he didn't say that I said that. We have choices that are very important, which is why he gets to choose what he does. And then I also noted that he spoke about solving world problems. And Publius, you are absolutely right. We do have to challenge what's going on in the world. But trying to broad brush problems, or at least humans trying to broad brush problems, has never gone well, has it? And you know what? I don't know that I'm working because Termius, or at least my term client, has not worked for ages. Maybe. Hang on, weird. My Rolly Plus Plus was not recorded. Well, thanks for the Plus Plus, Froggy Me. No, I didn't get the other one, but that's irrelevant, really. It's fun, hey, having plus pluses. But firstly, can you guys hear me? I mean, that's important to me. I don't want to be talking about everything for long if I'm not being heard. But let's get back to Publius. He spoke about education, and I thought those thoughts were great. In Australia, our kids get jobs very young, so they get to experience the workplace, and they get to experience nasty bosses, and they get to wake up early to get there and come home. And I think that is a taste of real life, which I certainly didn't get as a kid. And I think it works very well here. So the problem with education is that one size fits all, and that again is humans determining what we all learn. So I don't think that is a good thing to be centralized. It needs to be decentralized largely, a bit like the production of resources, you know, palm oil, for example. There are other local places you can get it. I thought very interesting was his discussion about the incandescent light that he bought. That's about 12 inches or 13 inches big. That takes me back to my childhood. We had, my dad had a huge light in his garage. I loved switching it on because it took ages to switch on. And switching it off because it slowly it went dim over time. I wonder what kind of light it was. And when I purchased this house 18 years ago, we had a huge mercury light out here heating the pool, and I think it was mercury. And the screw type fitting must have been about I'm going to go with 3 inches, but maybe 2, no, definitely 3, and absolutely monstrous. But that got me thinking about the mess we made with replacing the incandescent light with those fluorescent lights. What a shocking example of my liberty being compromised. You know, I had to go to the shop and buy these lights, which cost a flippin' fortune. They were like, back in the UK, they were like 9-10 quid each, just because I couldn't get the candescent ones anymore. So, yeah, seems wrong, doesn't it? And then out came the LEDs, and the great thing about LEDs, no one was forced to do it. It was a free choice. We were able to go and go, you know, do. Anyway. Hey, Publius, I really hope you don't mind me saying a few things here. If you do, just say so in com and I shall cease. I wrote a note here that said, advances in agriculture is meaningless when crazy people rule. And that's true. And there was a note about jetliners being equivalent to nuclear, in a sense. You know, the fact that if we can get that right, we can get the other right. At least that's the context I thought it was said in. The thing about jetliners or aircraft or Boeings is that when they're in the air, they are really quite autonomous. You've got the, by autonomous I mean the pilot gets to make the rules. And it's in everybody's interest in that plane that it gets to the other side. And I get that it's in everybody's interest that the nuclear station doesn't go bang. But by and large, there are these lots of these. I mean, if you look at an airline map and see where they're all are in the air at one time, they're everywhere, and everyone is a sort of a colony making their own decisions, by and large. I mean, I understand they have air paths to follow, etc. Again, I could be talking out of my hat, and if I am, I'm very sorry. So, I'm going to shut up. I'm going to play a song while I collect my excerpts about free speech. But first, let me try and find a song. And while I do that, I shall waffle a bit. I'm going to go to the very bottom of my list, which is fairly newer, much newer. This could be quite nice. Forgive me for taking a bit of time. Yeah, I'm gonna. Got it. Okay. I paused that because I'm going to run out of time. And what I wanted to say is I'm being carried away by Mozzie. So I'm just going to light a Mozzie coil. Oops. And I did pay attention to it. I want to leave this jolly thing on. There we go. I am lighting one of these Mozzie coils that you get. Quite an outdated system, but it works pretty well, and I at least can keep talking to you guys. And shh, cat. Okay, I'll feed you, just hang on. Where are you? Oh, I'm trying to do too many things here. Hang on, pussy. I'm also trying to keep quiet because Makani's just in the next room. Hang on. Shh, 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 shh. Here we are. I think you brought the Mozzies to me. Right, I'm about to start my first little excerpt on free speech. And like I said, I've been collecting these for a while, so don't shoot me. They're done by fairly reputable people, I think. Let's get into the first one. I'll go for a short one. This is Ethan Zuckerman, How We Shape Our Own Social Networks.
So, Clegg and others who point out that we end up shaping our own social networks have a point. We tend to follow people who we agree with. This is a sociological tendency called homogeny. Birds of a feather flock together. My first book, Rewire, was all about this. One of the interesting things is that social networks don't do much to challenge this right now.
Hang on, I think I'm doing this wrong. Because I didn't switch this off, so I'm going to start again, right? Very, very sorry about that.
It could throw a couple of Republicans into my feed. It doesn't do that in part because. So, Clegg and others who point out that we end up shaping our own social networks have a point. We tend to follow people who we agree with. This is a sociological tendency called homophily. Birds of a feather flock together. My first book, Rewire, was all about this. One of the interesting things is that social networks don't do much to challenge this right now. You could program Facebook so that, you know, if I only follow progressives, it could throw a couple of Republicans into my feed. It doesn't do that in part because it thinks that I would recoil and spend less time on the network. You can actually build civic networks that do something along those lines, that actually try to diversify the flow of information that you're getting. And that might actually be a very thoughtful way to go about doing this. So absolutely, we have dangers of putting ourselves in echo chambers. But I would argue that those echo chambers are less filter bubbles, the sort of Eli Pariser style where it's the algorithm's fault. I think they tend to be more of our own fault. And I think if we started building, you know, chambers that were designed to be anechoic, right? They were actually designed to help you encounter some of those different voices. That might actually be a very interesting step forward.
Assuming people actually want that, you know, I explain to people that the reason I don't watch very many film movies on TV is because when I relax, I don't want to watch murder. And most of the movies are about murder. And, you know, when I come for my leisure time, I might prefer not to have any of the curveballs from other political perspectives thrown at me. This is all, you know, all the fascinating questions, really. And I think that the conclusion that we came to a lot earlier in the show was that it was about promoting diversity. And I think it was Cory Doctorow that talked about one of the ways to deal with that is not just have interoperability, which tends to break everything. Oh, actually, it doesn't break everything. It reduces everything down to the lowest common denominator. Yep. But rather have adversarial interoperability.
That's exactly right. Yep.
people who disagree with the controlling platform have got the freedom to go hook into it in the way that they choose rather than the way they're allowed. Do you want to talk some more about, you know, I think you believe in that as well. Do you want to talk a little
bit
about
that? Yeah, absolutely. And Corey and I actually talk about this quite a bit because it's a common interest between our work. So, you know, again,
I think that's some interesting points there. And why that's poignant, I suppose, is because we at SDF and on a non-radio, certainly, which appears to be, by all accounts, a free-form station, are able to do things that and say things. And I've found that liberating. I've really found that refreshing. And I'm thankful for the community here. But I just would like to suggest, though, that we're cautious. And no, that's not my place to say. But because, you know, it's been here for since the 90s, and I don't think it's fair that somebody is on here more frequently and says things like that. But because very soon, there's a saying that conservative organizations tend to become more liberal over time, the longer they're established. Now, I'm not going into whether it's wrong or right, or I'm just saying that's the case. And free speech requires us being able to say things, whether it's liked or not. All right, let's play something else. What about, how long is this one? Yeah, this is Charlie, this is Salman Rushdie, the guy that wrote the Satanic Verses. And he, obviously, wasn't given much liberty with his free speech. And here he is making some interesting points. So here we go. Let's enjoy this. Press W. And, oh, by the way, do you like the birds? Can you hear them? Ah, you can probably hear the cars, which are whizzing past my intersection. Ah, there we are.
The French satirical tradition has always been very pointed and very harsh. Mm. And still is, mm-hmm. You know. And I mean, the thing that I really resent is the way in which these are dead comrades, you know, these people who died using the same implement that I use, which is a pen or right. a pencil, have been almost immediately vilified and called racists and I don't know what else. Charlie Hebdo attacked everything. It attacked Muslims, attacked the Pope, it attacked the Israel and rabbis, it attacked black people and white people and gay people and straight people. It attacked every kind of human being because what? It was making fun. Its strategy was to make fun of people. And it was seen as that. It was seen as that. It was very loved. These cartoonists were beloved in France. And now the moment somebody says, yes, I believe in free speech, but I stop listening. Mm. No. You know, I believe in free speech, but people should behave themselves. I believe in free speech, but we shouldn't upset anybody. I believe in free speech, but let's not go too far. The point about it is the moment you limit free speech, it's not free speech. The point about it is that it's free. You can dislike Charlie Hebdo, you know, not all their drawings were funny. You can dislike, but the fact that you dislike them has got nothing to do with their right to speak. The fact that you dislike them certainly doesn't in any way excuse their murder.
Yeah, I quite liked what he said there. And you know, the moment you say, let's have free speech, but let's not go too far. Let's have free speech, but let's, I can't remember the others because I'm pretty tired. But yeah, that is important. And I do think that, I'm not sure if one of the reasons things are tolerated on SDF is because there's so much other new stuff. So kind of like it's yesterday's news. So if you say something on your show, well, firstly, people can choose to listen or press on. Secondly, there's another new show tomorrow, and it's actually quite hard to keep track of everything. I mean, Stephen did a great talk about, what's that thing, Mastodon? And I tried to go find it a few days later. My goodness, was it hard to find? Even though it was at the beginning of what he, you know, the open VoIP. So I should check the time because I've got a bit more. Let me do Ethan Zuckerman again. So basically, I've got social media hate speech. I've got Peter Hitchings talking. That's a 6-minute chat. So I'll play music before that one. Brendan O'Neill and Baroness Floella Benjamin. No, that's not. I'm going to delete that right now. Delete. She's from Desert Island Discs, and she celebrated her life. She became a lord, you know, in the, what's it, House of Lords. All right, no more chatting. Let me press this button.
Sure. So let me start by saying that if you were going to build a novel social network, you should start with Mastodon. It's really good. It's really full-featured. It's incredibly thoughtful. It's actually very clearly designed by people who've thought very seriously about problems like content moderation. Mastodon gives you a bunch of options that most platforms don't. You can mute people, you can essentially force their post to be behind a cut tag so that, you know, if someone's posting inappropriate imagery, you can essentially blur it out. The most important thing of all of it is that everything in the moderation queue is stored. So there's a reviewable document of, you know, here's what actually happened to you in moderation. The hope is that you have no one, you know, saying, I've been shadow banned. You can literally look at the register and sort of say, here's what's going on. Here are the actions that were taken against you and when. My team is building software based on Mastodon. We have a product that we're trying out in the small university town of Amherst, Mass for local civic conversations. It's called Small Town. We took Mastodon, we turned off Federation, so this can be a standalone social network. We added in OAuth so that people who already had accounts with Facebook or Google could get accounts very easily and very quickly. And we're using it as the basis for a small social network. So in that sense, Mastodon just flat out works. It's lovely. And if you're going to build your own social network, start by building on top of Mastodon. The second part of Mastodon, which is as a community that serves as an alternative to Twitter, that's not working so well right now. You had sort of people like us, people who listen to shows about free and libre open source software, try out Mastodon in 2017, and a lot of people started up accounts, but they didn't actually get all that much traction because it turned out that many of us interact with people who weren't ready to move to Mastodon, and those abilities to interact beyond the network are not nearly as good as they should be. And, you know, my Mastodon account there shows that I am not functionally on Mastodon. I have posted a couple of posts. I'm going to have to get back to it, but everything there is from years ago. Here's what actually happened with Mastodon. It got adopted by people who did not fit well on other social networks. My favorite example of this is a site, and tragically it is no longer there, so don't bother trying to pull it up, but Switter.at Switter was a response from an amazing group in Australia called Assembly 4. Assembly 4 is a group of sex workers who are also digital activists and programmers. And when SESTA FOSTA passed in the US and forced sex workers off of Backpage, forced them off of Twitter, these remarkable women decided that it was really important to have a Twitter-like product for sex workers. And so they started up Switter.at, and they ran it for several years. It was one of the very most successful Mastodon nodes out there. Australia recently changed its rules to sort of go along the lines of SESTA FOSTA, and Switter had to turn itself off. But it was a great existence proof. This was a system that was used by almost 500,000 people. The trick is, it was used by 500,000 people who had a very specific need for it. They were sex workers and their customers, and this was where you went to have those conversations. People claim that they're sick of Facebook, they're sick of Twitter, they're going to get off of it. So far, there isn't a ton of evidence. What seems to happen is when people get deplatformed, including a certain former president I could mention, that's when people actually go to these other platforms. And rather than sort of participating in the full federated Mastodon universe, they seem to just sort of create their own parallel social networks.
So it's very interesting that you say that, because I've been on Mastodon quite a long time, and I've got I'm just looking at actually when I last posted, and it was a while back.
Me too.
I found I posted on Mastodon and I didn't get a lot of engagement there.
Yeah.
I found that often I was posting because I was relaying a conversation on Twitter rather than starting one. And you can't relay a conversation to a load of people who can't engage with the context.
That's right.
And that's a significant reason, I think, why Mastodon doesn't work. But I note that the real point of what you're saying there is that you shouldn't confuse the technology with its application. Mastodon is a fascinating piece of software, but what really matters is that Twitter wants to be the town square for America, and people who want to go to the town square for America go to Twitter, and if you want to go to the town square for sex workers, it's on Mastodon in another place, and if you want to go to the considered conversation about your family's progeny, it's probably in a private group on Facebook.
That's right. And, that's right.
I think we need to be focusing more on the applications than on the technology. Do you think there's a way we can do that without constantly being sucked back into technology and the legislation to control technology as the conversation point?
So first of all, I want to emphasize your point, because I think it's exactly right. There's the technology, and then there's the community that's based on it. By the way, for people who heard about Switter.at and sort of find that actually an interesting or useful service, you should look at tryst.link. This is the new service that the amazing women of Assembly 4 are now working on. But, you know, I'm starting to see many of the most interesting social networks are family chats or sometimes building chats on WhatsApp. These are when everyone in the same building forms a WhatsApp group so that they can talk about the issues of that building and that neighborhood. Is that the way to understand WhatsApp? It's really the way to understand the intersection of a piece of technology and a particular social use. Anytime we're talking about a social network, we're really talking about both the technical affordances and the moderation practices of the platform, and then whatever community is using it and what they're using it for. For me, the way through this is deep interoperability. So this tool that we've been building for some years now as Gobo, the thought behind it is to give you an app on your phone and on your desktop that lets you put all the different social presences you have in the same place. And if you'd like, you could just feed them into one timeline. You could interact with them individually. You could also run them through an algorithmic filter of one fashion or another.
We'll push that off there because we don't really want to hear about. I think he says something interesting after this, though. But Even so, we don't know what Gobo is. At least I don't want to have to learn a new thing. Yeah, music time. And then I have some other interesting extracts. So bear with me for a second while I find... Yeah, this is something I played a while back. By the way, yesterday I chose to... Well, I'd been watching YouTube and I found this playlist. And it was just 20 seconds of every song that was a number one in the 70s, starting at 1970 by month. So January, February, March, etc. And what song was top of the hit parade? And so I decided to emulate that. And I've been doing that on my Saturday morning. So strictly speaking, at 9 UTC for the next few weeks, you will get a taste of the 70s. And I think we got to the end of 1970 yesterday. And of course, it goes straight into good old Bronzy 94's show, Cafe 80s, which is a big hit in my book because it takes me back to all my fun music. Right, let's do it. I'm so tired, I'm going to play the biggest prize in sport. Yeah, that's a fun song, isn't it? And I played it because it says, when I get up in the morning, I begin to feel all right. And I am starting to feel all right now because we had a few glasses of wine while we were out. And Lydia drove and I think I sent a message on this on the, you know, the mail list at about, I don't know, I can't remember, but I calculated 3 hours of sleep and I think I got that in my, you know what happened at 2 a.m.? So I'd hardly gone, it wasn't 2, it was 3, exactly 3, because I looked at the time and went, oh my goodness, I've got to be up in, oh, I don't know, it was either 4 or 3. The Jolly House electric fire alarm, and it is loud, and it's in the passageway, and no one woke up, except me, because it was loud as I was sleeping, and I didn't know where the door was, it was disoriented and open. I finally managed to get out the room, and looked at it with flashing and wondered what to do, and wondered if there was a fire that I should be worried about.
These remarkable women decided,
and I
really important,
pressed it and it stopped, and I breathed a sigh of relief. But as I was relaying that story, it reminds me of something. These days, you know, in my day, and it sounds like I'm an old fellow, but you took your chances and you made sensible decisions based on what you understood of the data that you were able to get. So if you're going on holiday and it was flooding, you made a choice. But these days, I get these text messages from the blasted government. Now, don't get me wrong, I love the Australian government. I think they do many good things. But they send me this text and they warn me that my whole house is going to wash away, blow away, or burn down. And it never comes to pass. Oh,
so far there isn't a ton of evidence.
Breathed aside.
What seems to happen is when people,
I thought for a minute my computer was going to switch off. Anyway, they never come to pass, so they never actually happen, and they never manifest. So what does that do? It means that if you touch that, I'm going to do something to you, and then they never do it, because, and so the kid,
you say that, because my,
you know, ignores what the parent says, and we begin to ignore what our government say, because they warn us about this and that, and although, you know, like, but let's take Publius's warning about food shortages earlier. Now, that's a valid warning, a very valid warning, and I think there is a bit of shadow between, is it because of the crazy approach we took to COVID, where people have been, you know, things just didn't commute, didn't get on ships and planes, and people weren't able to manufacture. I think a lot of that is related to that. And I certainly endorse the idea of keeping stores, but I am being distracted. So I'm going to go see what Brendan O'Neill has to say.
And if you want to go to the considered conversation about your family's
X1 raise the volume, X1 lower the volume. Also, I'd like to shout out a few people. SCM was here earlier, I'm not sure. 10 volts, thank you for being here. Tobe, I saw you at the beginning. But stuff, I love what you had to say. You've had some very interesting points. Thank you.
I
call them points as if I'm a adjudicator or something. I appreciate what you say. Froggy Me said amen to something earlier in his comment, and I think, yeah, look, we need as much as we can of liberty and freedom right now. X1, Tin, always around this time because similar time zones, I guess. Publius, LD Beth, Adam D, and Bob Yonkman. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Let's play. This is a short one, so I'm going to play that, right? Here we go. But first, switch this off.
and a particular social use. Anytime we're talking social about media a social network,
have been called upon
really
to censor hate speech, and they've tried
and
to do so, but with
platform,
no more success than
whatever,
any other attempt at censoring hate speech by governments throughout history and
for
around
me,
the world. Hate speech is not a recognized legal concept in the United States, which is why
sorry, I confused myself there because I don't know what's going on. I'll tell you what I do. I use Audio Hijack and I have to switch between screens because I'm doing it on a single screen. And then I have my phone in my hand with VLC on it. I should have headphones. And I kind of like have my volume turned right down on my laptop so I play everything off without knowing what it's going to sound like. And then I listen to my phone. So it takes me 10 or 15 seconds to realize that it's not working like it should. X1 says free speech to mute and thank you. All right, I'm going to try again. Let's do it.
Social media have been called upon to censor hate speech, and they've tried to do so, but with no more success than any other attempt at censoring hate speech by governments throughout history and around the world. Hate speech is not a recognized legal concept in the United States, which is why I use the air quote. That said, speech that conveys a hateful message, along with speech that conveys any message, may in a particular context be punished if it directly causes specific, imminent, serious harm. Many people are surprised to learn that the First Amendment only applies to government, so social media literally have their own free speech rights to decide that certain voices and messages should be excluded from their platforms. I understand the moral satisfaction of calling for suppressing ideas that we hate, but experience shows that censorship does more harm than good. Countries around the world, including comparable democratic countries in Europe, Canada, Australia, and so forth, have been censoring hate speech for several decades. They have not been effective, most ironically being used to suppress the rights of marginalized individuals and groups. And not surprisingly, a very large coalition of civil liberties and civil rights organizations have been complaining to Facebook for years that it has punished as hate speech their advocacy of equality. For example, the Black Lives Matter movement on behalf of the pipeline protesters. Anybody who is objecting to government policies is disproportionately censored as engaging in hate speech. A more effective response to any idea we hate or consider hateful or dangerous is not to silence it, but to refute it, to explain why. A compassionate approach is much more effective than an angry, hostile, demonizing approach. Social media make it much easier to deploy hate speech, but counter speech is also more easily disseminated. What is the lesser of two evils? Would we rather trust ourselves and our fellow citizens to ignore and rebut messages that are hateful? Or would we rather trust either government officials or powerful corporate entities to take those decisions away from us? I'd say the lesser of two evils is making our own decisions.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. And I remember just while I was listening to that, this used to be a Freedom's time slot. And he had a lot to say about social media. Not social media, that's open source and GNU software. I liked what he said. He just vanished, unfortunately, which is, I was hoping he'd stick around longer. I'm sure he's, I hope he's still on SDF somewhere. One thing that happened last night is that I get to go with StokeSource to all sorts of places. And like I said, Lydia, my wife, and I both went last night to bring them home. And we were in this very busy bar, which had a nice feel to it. And it's in this street called Ocean Street. And you can probably hear the cars now. Wow, that's a big fat truck. And the kids gather there, so it's a long street with lots of bars, a bit like Nashville. Although I was telling Lydia all about Nashville when I was there and what it was like. It's a lot louder and a lot busier in Nashville, trust me. But it's quite pleasant in Ocean Street. So I walked behind the house to get away from the road. What I was trying to say, though, is that so many people came up to me and shook my hand and commented on my moustache, which I grew because during the December holidays, I was stood down for work. Thankfully, it was during the holidays because I'm unvaccinated. And that's such a dividing and polarizing thing to say. But it comes down to this free speech thing. It's like, you know, everyone I know who's... Anyway, I don't want to go there because it's not really... but all I'm trying to say is that free speech is so important. And I would hope that if I say things like I have just said, it wouldn't polarize the lovely people here from me, because we're all looking for a safe little place to spend time. I do have a few choices to make now. One of them is to play something. Peter Hitchings, I wonder, that's quite short. Oh no, 6 minutes. 8 minutes, 6 minutes, and 9 minutes. Peter Hitchings is a representative in the House of Lords. He might be quite interesting. I should try that. But is there anything else I want to summarize before I go? Let me see. Notes. One thing that Publius did resonate, one thing that Publius said that resonated with me was to understand how things work. And let kids go out to these places and discover them. When I was studying architecture, my lecturer took his students to the sewage works. And unfortunately, our intake didn't get that chance. But I'd heard stories about it, and it was one of the most... Well, maybe I missed that day. And he would see these big goo machines that would process, like big rollers that would pick up the poop. And slowly over time, they got waxy and oily and slimy and clear and almost... I don't want to say appealing, but looked like gel. And he would say to the audience, what do you think they use that for? And, you know, in the interest of recycling. And they'd guess, and he would say, lipstick. anyway, human involvement is the most important thing. That's also something Publius said, to be humanly involved. And yeah, in the end, it's about people. And Well, let's find a nice tune and sign out, because I've got 5 minutes. I really don't think I could say much more about free speech. Although I could say something about this time slot. I love this time slot, but it's so early. And it's quite hard to, you know, admire people like Tobe, who does a show every single day. And I also admire people like Snowdust and Froggy Me, who do two shows. And who else does two shows? Quite a few people. That's beautiful, isn't it? I'm standing under a very large mango tree. That is also beautiful. And it's easily 40 foot by 30. No, it's bigger than 30 wide. And it's got a fresh set of foliage, so it's all light green. A few patches of dark green. And that's quite interesting for winter, although you can't really call this winter. I don't want to leave without saying what I wanted to say, and I'm scared of... my show. I'm thinking that maybe I shall abandon this time slot and just keep the 9 a.m. UTC on Saturday. If you think that's a good idea, let me know. I really don't. I think it's a decision. I just have to do it because I'm quite tired now, and it's Mother's Day in the Southern Hemisphere, so that'll be fun. Right, here goes, let's look for it. Where is my music? Yeah, I could play Stop. I could play something. I'm going to play an old... I'm going to play something by Daddy Cool. It's called Come Back Again. I hope you'll continue listening to my shows after I've said what I have about free speech.
I'm open around the streets late at night. I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you, babe. I spoke to your mom and I spoke to your dad. They said I was crazy, it made me feel sad. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you, babe. Feeling so sad, so lonely too. You don't know how it is to feel sad, lonely and blue. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you, babe. I spoke to your dad and I spoke to your mom. They said, go away, boy, and leave us alone. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you, babe. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you, babe.